Howdy do, Claire. How are we doing?
Hey, how's it going, Zach?
Oh, it's doing pretty well. It's kind of gloomy here, but it's been a good day.
Yeah, a little unexpected rain. We were promised sunshine. Sorry if I sound super like scratchy and hoarse. I'm not sick. I just was kind of pulled in for an emergency substitute teacher on the music classes at my studio. So I was screaming Itsy Bitsy Spider and Wheels on the Bus at the top of my lungs for a couple hours this morning.
Well, that's pretty good. I don't even know if I know all the verses to that, but
well, you got to know the verses. You have to do the hand motions. And while you're doing both of those things, you have to be, you know, childproofing all around you as well. So
we won't make you recount it. Good snacks, at least.
No snacks allowed. I don't want bugs in my studio.
Gosh.
Come on, Zach. You're there to sing and do art.
That's great.
Not eat granola all over the place.
So, gosh, I got to tell you this because, and I've been meaning to tell you all week, but last Saturday, we went down, my friend Julie and I think I've mentioned her before. She's an art historian.
Yeah.
And she and I wanted to go see the Dawood Bey exhibition that was at the Virginia Museum of Fine Arts. He's a fantastic photographer. And the VMFA actually commissioned part of this exhibition. So we got to go down on Saturday.
Oh,
we had brunch.
Awesome.
It was great. And then we ran over to VMFA and got tickets. And it was amazing. And I'm sad that it's closed because I really wanted you to see this one.
Yeah, I'm so jealous. I think I always wait until the last second. And I had this assumption that that exhibit was going on through April. And I was confusing it with the other photography exhibit that was Willie Ann Wright. She did pinhole cameras. And like, I still have yet to even get down and see her stuff. Pinhole cameras are kind of cool, super low tech. But anyway, her stuff is up through April 28th. But I guess I missed what you saw.
Yeah,
so tell
you
me about him, though. Like, be my eyes. Tell me.
Well, but before I tell you, I have to say, like, my story about pinhole cameras is when I was in Cub Scouts as a kid. Like, I remember, do you remember doing that for like the eclipses and stuff?
No, I did that like in college. I didn't get to do it when I was a Cub Scout age.
Oh, it was the best. And so you take like the oatmeal back when they were cardboard containers and you would make them out of that. Anyways, I loved doing that. In fact, Harry Alley, who was a fantastic artist, he was based in the US and then he was in Mexico for a while. And I think he's back in the US. We were so lucky that he actually taught at the university where I lived. And so he taught us how to do the pinhole camera thing. It was so much fun. Anyways.
Zach, I find that like you had a good troop. You know, a lot of like Cub Scout, Boy Scout, Girl Scout troops like do coloring pages. Okay.
Oh,
like,
well, that's
you're
true.
Making pinhole cameras. Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, I should have stuck with it. But then they started doing all this other like hiking stuff, which I love hiking now. But like at the moment, I was like, I just want to make pinhole cameras.
You're like, more art, more art. So like what did you successfully capture? Like what image did you successfully get in your pinhole camera?
I think that we did the pinhole camera around one of the eclipses, right?
Uh-huh.
And so I can't remember exactly what it was, but
You guys were combining like science and art. Like you had like rock star Cub Scouts.
Exactly. No, that's exactly it. So anyways, that's my pinhole camera story. Maybe we should do those as adults sometime. Anyway, okay, so I'm digressing. But yes, the exhibition was amazing. And I didn't get to see the one you're mentioning. I want to go back down and see that. But, you know, he's a fantastic photographer. And it did open last fall. It just closed this weekend. So it was around for a little while. But it was 42 photographs and to what I would call kind of immersive films that really were a journey. I mean, you kind of start, you almost call it like a triptych because you kind of had like these three parts to the exhibition. Like one part was about the Virginia Slave Trail, and this was kind of a lot of the photographs that were taken around Richmond that were actually commissioned by the VMFA. And then there was a section on kind of Louisiana plantations and revisiting those, and then there was a third piece about the Ohio Underground Railroad, which were some of his past works that when you put all of them together with the two films that were kind of immersive in the middle, it really took you on a journey that was powerful. There's a lot of kind of audio and visual elements to this, so you're not just looking at photographs, but you go from photographs into one of the films, and you go back to photographs and go back to the film, and then so it really does walk you through this.
Okay.
This experience.
So are they color? Are they black and white? a mixture?
Yeah, they're all black and white. And they, I have to say, the curation on this and just the layout, the lighting, it was really beautifully put together. And so it really took you on this very kind of low light and what I would almost call meditative, so that you have this experience kind of able to, in a quiet sense, walk through until you get to the film. And then the film incorporates a lot of sounds. So you've got some chanting, you've got people's breathing, you've got some chains. You hear a lot of like movement, people walking through the woods, for example. There's this one where you're kind of walking along the riverbank.
I have so many questions. Number one, is there figures? Are there people in these photos, or they're just places?
Oh, that's a great question. So there's the implication of people, but there are not actual figural images. So it's okay. Like the Louisiana section, the plantations, you're walking through in the photographs, there are old cabins, for example, and there is the kind of native landscape that's overgrown, and you've got palmetto trees, and you see the vast expanse of where people lived and what it looked like. So there's this one image that's just rows and rows of cabins going down this main kind of dirt road with an alley of trees. And it just gives you a really good sense of place. And then there's that feeling of almost loneliness and detachment. But
oh my goodness. Now you're telling me this after the exhibit has left, Zach. Like, I knew it was there, but like, okay.
Well, I'll take you with me next time. But, you know, one of the things that I saw in the exhibition is he said that he creates these works to provoke a conversation. And it's a conversation about the past, but conversation about the past in the present moment. So we're kind of bringing all that forward to really get people engaged and talking. And here's something really cool. At the very end of the exhibition, you walk out into kind of this little hall. It was like a relaxation area, right? Because you've gone through a pretty heavy, intense exhibition. You walk out, there's couches, and you can kind of sit and reflect. There's some books there. And there's this one kind of wall with pegs on it. There's probably like 50 or 60 pegs. And off to the side are these kind of cue cards. And so at the top of each card, there's a question. And there's like 10 different questions. And you can choose to sit there and answer the questions. And so then you take your card that has a hole punch at the top and you put it on a peg. And so you walk out and there's this huge board with all these different handwritten responses to these questions. And you can stand there and see what other people felt.
So you're like sharing what others got from that, what you just experienced.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So what a great idea. That's why I love the VMFA. Love them. Love them.
It was great, but it was also kind of, that was an impactful part for me too, even though it wasn't part of the formal exhibition, because I got to read what other people were feeling going through it, and it kind of helped me have even a broader perspective on what I had just experienced. And some of them were hard to read, you know, because again, we have not always had a very inclusive history. So, but yeah, it was... Yeah. A really wonderful
experience. Got really excited when you were describing the like row of cabins. Especially when it was hard for you to answer, like, well, there wasn't really people in the photographs, but there was. And I totally get what you're saying, because there is such a power to a place. And to further explain what I mean, I've often thought, you know, if I had 1,000,000 hours in each of my days, I would do a series of paintings on just places that are part of my history, just because. I don't know about you, but like whenever I have a dream, I go back to the same place that I grew up in, because I lived in the same house for, you know, like 17 years. So even if my dream is set in present day, it's like my brain just is in that one place. So it is really powerful that these photographs are documenting where really heavy things occurred and people's journeys and histories, and it's all tied to a place.
Yeah, and it's storytelling. And I think a lot of us don't have all those stories again. Like, we have missed stories in the last several hundred years that are important for us to tell. And, you know, I guess even thinking about this so recently, maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, you know, Chris and I, we went up to the African American Museum in D.C., and it was a phenomenal experience. I'd never been before. And the design, the curation of the building, but it was such a wonderful storytelling experience, because you walk through and you have these individual people that have made really important contributions. And it just was really an amazing journey. Anyways, so I kind of thought about that here, that we're, you know, it's a great way of sharing those stories. And so I'm so glad the VMFA commissioned this work, because it brings part of that conversation about Virginia. You know, they talk about the 350,000 slaves, men, women, children, that were sold from Richmond's auction blocks at the Manchester docks on the James River between like 1830 and 1860. And that was another part of the exhibition where there's actually a film called 350,000. And so it just, I'm really impressed that we're able to have those kind of conversations, and that Dawood Bey was able, you know, he came to Virginia and did this, and felt like it was an important story to tell.
Well, yeah, thanks. I didn't go see the exhibit, but at least I got something from it via you. So thanks.
Yeah, absolutely.
But speaking of museums where you can just say, I want to go see this, I want to experience this, let's talk about kind of a ethical topic in art and ownership. And that is, like, does the public kind of deserve to have access like this to see art all the time? Or is that, do we just assume that that's an implied right we all have? Or these private collectors, do they have a right to buy up on an auction and support the arts in that way with their many, many, many dollars, and then do whatever they want with the art, which sometimes means you and I will not have access? How do you feel about that?
Interesting. Well, I would say that yes, if you have the money, you can buy art. I mean, that's just the system that we've established, and you can buy art for $1 million, you can buy art for $10. But yes, we do say that people can buy art and they can do whatever they want with it. You know, people can put it in their homes, they can donate it to charities, they can put it in museums. This has been kind of the age-old system we've established.
Right. And it helps establish the value as well, right?
It does. But then I guess your point is, you know, when does a piece of art have enough public value that people should have some type of access to it? And that's a really tough call. I mean, I think that, you know, your question about museums, yes, museums kind of have this idea, this mission, this ethos that we create public spaces for people to go and experience art. And it's about access. And we've done a much better job over the years of telling, again, going back to our original conversation, telling all the stories, or as many of the stories as we can, that are more inclusive, and also making sure that everyone has access to go and see them. So we're not going to say, well, just because you can't pay the $10 for that ticket, you can't go see it. So I think creating access in museums is really an important part of that conversation. But then, okay, so I think about that, the painting by Da Vinci. Was it the...
Now it's leaving me.
The Salvador Mundi?
Yeah, I was thinking saint something, but yeah.
Salvador. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so this is the painting of Jesus Christ that Da Vinci supposedly painted, and it sold for what, $450 million back in 2017?
And do we all get to go look at it?
No, we do not, because it disappeared, and it's probably sitting in a vault somewhere underground, or in a, you know, a nice climate controlled cushiony bed. But you know, it's not going to be something that you and I can just go and check out. In fact, there was even supposed to be an exhibition, I think, in Abu Dhabi, and it got canceled kind of shortly after it was purchased. And so, like, I don't think it's ever been seen again. As of a couple of years ago, yeah. No one had heard of it. So I don't know.
Which, you know, like, the easy answer on that is like, oh, we don't like that, right? But then you could argue this other side of, like, well, does that private owner have any obligation to any of us? They are protecting it, we would assume, for centuries to come. And, you know, is that the right thing to do? I mean, many private collectors, I'm sure, loan out their pieces and do allow them to go to museums. Other private collectors simply own them and enjoy them within the confines of their own homes.
Yeah, I mean, I think a big motivator in investing in art is that it does appreciate in value. I mean, we've seen that pretty consistently through time, that, you know, we even talked about Louise Bourgeois's The Spider, you know, in our last episode, in episode 2. And, you know, you saw that that was sold for like, what, $13 million, and then later on it sold for like $40 million. So there's this kind of appreciation, and people make a lot of money by brokering art deals. But then it becomes a question of like, when do people really get to enjoy it? I don't know.
I mean, right.
Would I love to see the Salvador Mundi? Absolutely. That'd be amazing. Is it on the docket to happen anytime soon? Probably not. So you know,
how much art do you think is being bought up? And let's just, for shorthand in this conversation, call it the wrong reason, right? If you're just buying it to, I don't know, grow your portfolio or help with tax season, that's the wrong reason. So how much art do you think is being bought up and then just stashed away for the wrong reason versus, I really don't have a problem with, you know, extremely wealthy people taking things out of maybe that rotation that could be seen at a public museum. I feel like we shouldn't frown upon that, I guess. Even though you and I might not love it because we're not having access to those, like, you know, estates and villas, perhaps, to see them at private parties. But
Yeah, I don't know how much is in private collections. I mean, I think we can assume that there's quite a lot. You know, I think you're probably, I'd heard one statistic once, it was like $10 billion worth of art in kind of private collections. And, you know, of course, not a lot of it's publicly accessible. But I would have to stick up for the folks that do buy it and say, it's not just about taxes. It's not just about, you know, investing. I think it does have an element of attraction to it. So the same way that you look at a piece and say, I like that, I want to buy it, I want to keep it, I want to hold it, I want to put it on my wall, I want to look at it every day. There are people who feel very strongly about owning that piece of art. Is it right or wrong? I can't say that it is or isn't. I mean, I think a lot of times you think about art investors as preservationists too, because they are the ones who have for so long kept pieces of art, famous pieces of art, in fact, in good condition, in good shape, well preserved. And in some cases, those went on to museums. In some cases, they didn't. But at the end of the day, they've been well preserved and well kept. So is it better to have that piece of art in the vault, but knowing that it is in a controlled environment where it can be preserved for future generations? But then you look at something like the Mona Lisa, which does kind of sit on public display with all those same benefits and characteristics, except for when she gets soup thrown on her. But otherwise, you know, she's in a space where she can be taken care of. So I think that's an important point.
Yeah. You could also say, does it feed the artists? Do those high bids, no matter what happens to that art afterwards, does it feed the artists to have a hierarchy of, I know it, there's only a handful of artists that are commanding the millions, right? But the trickle-down effect, like if there is that hierarchy to shoot for, it does help feed the artists, I guess, probably more than a museum acquisition would.
I mean, it could. It just depends. I mean, I think that, of course, if something sells for $40 million and it's going to increase the overall value of your work, then yes, then the next time you sell something, it's going to have a more commanding price. So definitely something that I think helps artists overall. But of course, can most people afford $40 million? No, they can't. But that's why we do have public institutions that constantly are rotating in and out of these fantastic collections. We've got art being shared across the world. It's coming from Paris. It's coming into the U.S. and it's going from the U.S. back to Paris. And so it's just an exciting time, though. I think we have a really global art world that we're able to share things and see an exhibition here, or we can go like I missed the Singer Sargent that was at the Boston Museum of Fine Arts, but now it's heading to London. So like, you know, if you can't catch it here, you can always go there as well. But
yeah, I've started looking at exhibits in the way that, like, I'll look at these priceless vases or, you know, these canvases, and my mind goes towards, like, I picture how it was transported when you were talking Paris and New York and back again. I just imagine those people packaging, and, you know, I feel like there could be an exhibit about that, about the travel of the art.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm fascinated by the way that we ship expensive paintings around. There's this person I follow on TikTok and Instagram that shows kind of how they're shipping these really beautiful Van Goghs around the world, and it's kind of cool to see. But well, Claire, it's been great talking to you today. I love our chats.
Right. Are you going to go make some hot tea today?
I am going to go make some hot tea on this gloomy day. And then I'm probably going to go look at some art snap. So we'll see what's going on.
All right. Well, thanks for talking today, Zach, and I will see you soon.
All right. Talk to you later, Claire. Bye.
Bye.